accession number 28624, reel 10.
Use powder and so on. They soon disappear. No. A healthy chap soon gets rid of his ailments.
Okay. And you mentioned the ranges, that there were some ranges, etc., outside the actual Gordon Highlanders camp.
The assault course was immediately outside, which we used on a daily basis, I suppose, if we were in camp. The ranges, the actual live-firing ranges, were towards Nakuru, they were about a good 12 miles away. I forget the name of the ranges now, but that would have been a long march. I mean, when we went there to, you know, practice firing, and so you got into trucks to go there, because that was probably 12, 15 miles away towards Nakuru, and they were made use of, not on a daily basis, but on a regular basis.
And you mentioned that they were about 12 miles away. Did you ever march there? Or
that could be done. But by and large, you know, we were extremely fit. And in camp and out of camp, you were marching anyway. I mean, we used to do 9-mile marches several times a week from barracks, just to keep fit. So if you're going to have a day on the range, you know, to walk there, to march there and to march back would really lose so much of your day. It was important just to get there and get on with your live firing and put right whatever was wrong with target practice.
And was it difficult to march as well in the heat, you know, if you were trying to do quite a long march?
It wasn't. I mean, you know, fitness is the overriding factor at any time, and we were very fit. You know, the heat will slow you down, it'll affect you, but, you know, you'll just get on with it, and fitness will overcome all of those matters.
And so, with mentioning the assault course and marching, were you keeping up the training as to the normal level? You know, were you training to quite a high level?
Yes, we were. I mean, it was... we were, as I said before, I think, we were out of camp a huge amount of time, and we were carrying out our own company training, that's platoon training, section training, and that is your section attack, your platoon in defence, platoon in withdrawal, then taking it up to company level. And we were out camping out. I mean, Kenya is such a wide open place, and the landowners were always delighted to let us carry out these maneuvers on their land, because we really weren't interfering with their livestock or anything like that. So the whole of Kenya, it seemed to me, was one large, glorious training area. So we were able to get on with all the sort of training we wanted to do. Terrific.
Okay. So when you were camping out with camp, was there never a threat from wild animals?
Yes, I mean, there was a threat, and I don't think we had any casualties from that, but we did have a situation where five live rounds were, you'll understand that when you're out of manoeuvres, you're firing blanks, your live firing is only on the disciplined live firing range. When you're out of manoeuvres, you fire blanks, but each platoon officer, each subaltern was given five live rounds just in the event of a need to deal with it. But, I mean, I do recall the occasion when, on a training exercise, I had gone off on a night patrol, leaving the platoon behind with Sergeant Hutton and one other, Lance Corporal Donald it was, and we were out wrecking, a night wrecking, and we thought we were in the right place. I left Sergeant Hutton and Corporal Donald there, and I then moved on my own, just to be certain, and I came across some hyena who didn't get out of the way, and I always understood that they lived on the dead and dying. Well, I can assure you they don't. And they were certainly very anxious to see if I was dead or dying. And I got up a thorn tree, and there I stayed for some time, waiting for them to go, which they eventually did. But, there was that's an example of a threat. You know, had I come down, there were about four of them, and they're huge creatures, and ready to deal with you. So there was a threat, but I don't think we had any casualties at all. Having said which, of course, we did on one occasion, a Royal Court transport driver was bitten by a crocodile. But in the main, I mean, most of the animals do prefer, if they see it, you know, a whole lot of trucks coming or a whole number of soldiers coming, I mean, that they slink off. They don't want confrontation like that. But just the odd occasion it might happen.
So did these hyena make quite a bit of noise?
No, they didn't. They were just at the bottom of the tree slavering away, and I remember them distinctly. It was a very clear night, and by the light of the moon I could see them. But anyway, I had the five rounds of live ammunition, but I wouldn't have a mind to do anything until absolutely necessary. I preferred to wait it out, which I did. But perched up a thorn tree for a couple of hours is not a comfortable situation to be in anyway.
Is a thorn tree quite a large tree?
They used to be called umbrella trees, thorn trees. I think their proper name is an acacia tree, I think. But it's not very tall, no, but you know, tall enough to get out of reach of them. They don't climb trees like cats do. I mean, a leopard or something would shin up that tree quicker than you could, but they didn't. They just stayed down there, and it was beyond their reach. No, it's not very tall at all. You're sort of 7 or 8 or 10 feet up.
And were you attacked? Did they actually bite you?
No, not at all, no. Oh, no, if they had, I mean, that would have been the end. I mean, they've got jaws like crocodiles. They're huge, powerful beasts. One forgets big and savage they are.
You've been mentioning there, like when you were out on exercises, military exercises. And most of the time, what did you do for accommodation when you were out on these exercises?
Well, the accommodation depended on the scale of the exercise. I mean, we would occasionally go out just as a platoon for, say, a week. And you would take tents with you for that. If you were a company and you were likely to be based in one place for a period of time, again, it was a tented camp. If you were on a maneuver, this was just company and platoon training. So you would do it from wherever you were, and you would go out each day, do whatever your program was for that day, then you would come back to a camp, unless you were on night patrol or something like that. But basically, you did it from a tented camp. The next stage up would be when the companies came together with a battalion. It would be a battalion training exercise, and you would probably start the first half of that period of time from a tented camp, but then it would inevitably finish up with a battalion exercise, which might last, say, 3 or 4 days, and this was no longer a camp, because there would be a story, a program to the exercise, and you would leave your camp, and you were just out in Kenya proper, and you would be advancing or drawing or doing whatever, but you would be sleeping rough at that point. And then when we came up to brigade level and so on, there was no tented camp at all. You were just part of a manoeuvre which might cover 100 miles in a week, and again, you were sleeping rough.
And when you say sleeping rough, did you have a ground sheet or anything?
Yes, you carried a ground sheet. Your robe at the back of your equipment was a ground sheet with a lightweight blanket inside it. You rolled these two together, and That was your role, as it was called. And you put these, the ground sheet below you and blanket above you, because even in summer, Kenya at night, bearing in mind that Nairobi is 5,500 feet above sea level, Gilgil was over 6,000, and as you went further up the Rift Valley, you were 8,000 at least. So at night it gets very cold, and the transition from very hot at midday to very cold in the early hours of the morning. So your blanket was necessary.
And did you ever wear any extra clothing at night time to keep warm in a situation like that?
No, I think the clothing was much the same. The khaki drill and shirt was the order of the day, and that's all you would want, because as soon as the sun came up in the morning, you know, the cold disappeared and the heat arrived, and you didn't want to carry extra with you to keep you warm at night. If you were sleeping and not moving, therefore, you know, that is when you're coldest, but a blanket was just about enough. If you weren't sleeping at night, if you were moving, then you're keeping warm anyway.
And did it ever rain when you had to sleep like that?
Yes, I'm trying to remember the rain. There was a rainy season, I can't remember how many inches of rain Kenya gets, but very little up in the Northern Frontier District and the Somali border, but it's desert there almost. But the rest of Kenya is really quite green. I wouldn't say lush, but the game there grazes quite well, and so it gets enough during the rainy season, which I suspect was sometime in the winter.
But you never had to sleep rough when it was raining, did you?
Oh yes, our manoeuvres were not seasonal. You carried these out throughout the year, so I don't remember being washed away or anything like that.
Okay. And when you were in the smaller exercises, like the platoon ones or the company ones, with the tents, was that the bell tent that you used, or was that a different style?
We had bell tents and cottage tents. I think we had a mixture. The bell tent was certainly one I recall. Yes, I think it was bell tent that we used in the main.
And if you were with your platoon, would you be the most senior officer there?
Yes, if it was just the platoon exercise, which we often did. There might be, perhaps all three platoons within the company were out at the same time, but we'd all be in different areas, and just getting on with our own training program for that particular week, if it was a week. So, we wouldn't have contact with each other. So it would be my platoon, my training program, and we'd just get on with it.
Okay. And would you be sharing one of these tents with the men?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you've got your platoon headquarters, which is officer, sergeant, signaller, and so on, and then you've got the three sections. So there would probably be four tents accommodating eight men in each.
And you mentioned your training program. Would this be a program that you would have devised, or would that have came from somewhere else?
No, I think it would be most certainly one that I devised. It might well be that the commander had told us to concentrate on certain aspects of tactics, which would allow us to sort of reach an acceptable standard, prior to the company training. But having been given that sort of to concentrate on, the program would be for you to write, and where you would finish up with the platoon exercise, which would take in every aspect that was necessary, and you would actually write an exercise, and it would be one that you had written, and then you would deploy accordingly.
And did you enjoy doing that type of thing?
Oh, yes, I just loved it. Yeah, I mean, that's why I enjoy it. And, yes, indeed. It was terrific to be able to do that and to be in so charge of what you were doing. But then, you know, you're only part of a team. So, you know, when it got to company and battalion, it was excellent to be in part of that too. Yes, no, I loved it. And, of course, you couldn't find a better place in the world to train and practice these things. There was always something to see.
And, you know, when you first started doing these training programs, did a more senior officer help you, or had you just tried on with it?
Yes, the help was always available, and you know, when you were sent out to do this, I mean, you know, the company commander, of course, wouldn't just ignore the fact that you were no longer around and put his feet up. I mean, he would be coming out to visit and assist. He'd be watching what you were doing and, you know, providing criticism, constructive criticism that would allow you to put right anything that wasn't right in his view. So you were learning all the time too. It wasn't a case of you imparting your knowledge, because I suspect after the sort of training you've had as an officer cadet, you don't have a huge amount of knowledge, and indeed very little experience, so it needs to come from someone more senior. So you're learning as well as training and teaching the jobs.
And when you went out as a platoon, was that normally for a day or two, or was it for longer?
Yeah, we tended to go for longer. The training areas were always some distance away. You know, not all that far, I suppose, but you would be driving perhaps 100 miles, which would take a bit of time on those rough roads. And I don't think we were ever away for less than 5 or 6 nights. It tended to be about a week, I think.
And what did you do for food in that week?
We took our rations with us, and we would set up our own little platoon cookhouse, because there's absolutely no reason why you can't cook. I mean, we didn't take cooks with us from the cookhouse. They would stay in camp, but it's for a platoon to learn how to survive and do better than survive. There's no reason why, and there's always someone there who knows a bit about cooking. And we used to set up our burners and provide hot food in the morning and in the evening. And when we came back to our base camp, we wouldn't come back we wouldn't be there at lunchtime. You went further afield and then came back in some formation or other. But then you provide a hot meal in the evening.
And was it like a traditional hot meal, or was it like a stew or something?
Yeah, it was a stew. It was tinned rations by and large. You would get, I mean, it was called composite rations, which were just tins of sausage and beans, or tins of some sort of casserole. I mean, these were old wartime rations, which had survived all these years and were perfectly safe to eat. I won't say they were really good to eat, but if you you could take out some fresh vegetable or fruit with you, might not survive the entire week in the heat, but for the first few days anyway, a mixture of the tins warmed up with the vegetables cooked would provide a perfectly adequate meal. And the important thing was to get enough, really, because exercising as one did, you know, you were always hungry, so I suppose everything tasted all right, really.
Okay, and when, you know, the area where you were camping, did the truck stay there, or did the truck go away?
No, the trucks would go back, and they just drop you there with all your equipment and so on, and you wouldn't see them again until the appointed time on the due date, say a week later.
Okay. And so during the day when you were out, on the training program doing the exercise, was there anybody left at the camp?
No, is the answer. Everyone involved. I mean, there would be the occasion when someone wasn't feeling well or had gone down with some sort of local ailment or something, and if you left him behind, he was under orders to look after the camp. But if everyone was 100% fit, everyone went out. And on one occasion, I wish we hadn't all gone out, because I remember David Hendry, who was training, he was a platoon commander, and he was training allegedly a few miles away, came, led a patrol, which was part of his training program apparently, and let all our tents down and generally mucked our camp up, and like no one's business, and leaving a note to say that it was him. So, but mind you, I suppose if we'd left someone there, there was little he could have done about it. So. But I remember that.
And was he a friend?
Yes, he was a friend, and still is, I have to tell you.
And so, if you had left any fresh food there, was it ever, you know, did anything ever eat it? Or?
Well, yes, but the fresh food, yes, it could have disappeared, whether it would be to a passerby, an African, but we really were out in the sticks, and so I know that Africans lived out in the sticks too. They tended not to come too close. An animal could certainly have walked past, and it can scent anything from some distance away, and it might have taken something. But that wouldn't have been a major problem, because the main thrust of our rations was all tinned compo.
And when you were in the tents as well, did you have like these beds, these low-lying beds, or were you sleeping rough again?
No, if we were setting up camp, if the equipment was being taken out in trucks, such as these bell tents, then you would also take camp beds with you and just set them up. Of course, on a manoeuvre or a battalion exercise, when you had left camp behind, you didn't take beds or anything with you, and you couldn't possibly. I mean, but if you had a tented camp, you would also have your camp beds.
And what about water supply?
Yeah, well, that was water you would take with you. And that would be enough for the week. The signalling equipment we had certainly didn't have a range to ask for more, but that was an important part of the training, because, you know, wherever you go, I mean, in Kenya, which was an ideal place to be on standby for an equally hot, if not hotter, area, such as a desert in Kuwait, which was our role, standby for that. You know, it's important to train for the discipline of water and water rationing, because you can't always whistle up more water. So part of the training was really to allocate sufficient water for washing, such as you could, and that was kept to a minimum, of course, and then drinking, and part of it for cooking and so on. But you know, you it was discipline that you had to enforce. And so you were very conscious of the fact that, you know, if we're out for 7 days, then 1/7 and no more of the water will be used one day, same again the next day, and so on, because you didn't have the chance to whistle up anymore.
And so was it part of your job to calculate, for instance, how much water you would need to take with you?
Yes, that was very much, well, the buck stops with you, but, you know, your platoon sergeant would be overseeing that, just as he did the allocation of ammunition and so on. He really became the quartermaster of the platoon, so to speak, and water was a very important responsibility which he had.
And did you ever have any problems, you know, actually allocating the water?
No, not in a base camp, because we could always take enough in the way of jerry cans of water out with us, and you know, you always took as much as you could, because there wasn't a shortage back in Gilgal, obviously, So you took out what you needed. The water shortage problems used to arise when the manoeuvres started, when you would be leaving your base camp and not coming back to it. You know, if you were coming back to it and your water bottle you took out with you, you knew that you were going to be away from a water resupply for, say, 10 hours or whatever it was. And so you had to be, everyone had to be disciplined as they needed to be, you know, with their own water bottle. You only took a sip at a time when you could, and didn't finish it all off by midday. But that was easy because you were coming back to it at a number of hours later. It was during the manoeuvres that I remember being extremely thirsty and indeed short of water, because you do need huge quantities in the heat, and you're just not getting huge quantities. And as you're not coming back to a base camp, you're always going forward and forward to another night rendezvous. If the battalion water bowser didn't come up, and once or twice it didn't, you know, your water bottle had to last you for, say, 24 hours instead of 12, and then you really are short of water and you're very, very thirsty. And I remember being very, very thirsty on a number of occasions, but not on these platoon weeks.
Good morning, Mr. Kinghorn.
Good morning.
We're still working on Kenya, and there was one or two questions I still had to ask you about it.
Yeah.
And it was, whilst you were on exercises or manoeuvres or anything, did you ever have an enemy?
Yeah, most certainly, yeah, depending on the scale, of course. Our training was basically done at platoon level. You'd be sent out as a platoon to fine-tune your section attacks, your platoon attacks, your night patrols, your fitness training, your ability to live rough, cook for yourselves, and just generally look after yourselves, always building up fitness. If you were at that level, just a platoon out for a week or 10 days, whatever it was, you didn't have an enemy. You might create your own enemy out of the numbers in your platoon. For example, if you sent a section out on a night patrol, which involved compass reading, map reading, and just getting to a point and back and reporting what they'd seen, you might set up, just for a matter of interest, an ambush at some point along there, and you'd use men from your another section. But we were given no other enemy. You were just a platoon out on your own. The same largely applied, as from memory, to companies. A company would go out and it would be into platoon the staff just training as a company, and no enemy was provided. Once you were out in a battalion operation, it was necessary really to introduce an enemy, and this was provided by East Africa Command or Brigade Headquarters. You know, our commanding officer would be asking for an enemy to be supplied, and the company might come from the Staffordshire Regiment or the Scots Guards or some other unit in Kenya. And then after that, of course, as you got onto brigade and divisional manoeuvres, which were large scale and spread over a large area, it was essential that enemy were provided, just to rather test the battalions, the battalion commanders, the company commanders, and you did need enemy, and these were supplied. So it depended what scale you were training at.
And when you were out on these exercises and manoeuvres, did you know that there was going to be an enemy somewhere? Did you know roughly where they were going to be?
No, you didn't know where they were going to be. it might come at any time. Enemy, as I said, were provided at major brigade and divisional manoeuvre levels. And there would be a story written around the particular exercise. In other words, we were going to be part of a force that was going to be advancing towards a known enemy up, say, on the Somali border, something like that. So there would be a story written. We would be, therefore, advancing, perhaps. But, as always, advancing to take on the enemy at this particular border, you were certainly, you could expect to meet